It is a beautiful Monday morning.
Absolutely sensational.
I like him. He's aggressive. He gets in there.
But I do have one more point about Liverpool, though.
Honestly.
Absolutely stunningly beautiful.
Kolasinac. Oh, geez.
An absolute beautiful goal.
Welcome to the Trademate Sports Podcast.
Hi guys, this is Marius from Trademate Sports and welcome to episode 14 of the Trademate Sports Podcast, where we talk Liverpool, Arsenal, Premier League and the upcoming Champions League round. With me as always, I have Alex.
Thank you, mate. It's good to be back. Never really been happier to do a podcast, I don't think, because this is like a rare occasion where Arsenal have won a game and Liverpool have lost a game. This is probably the first time ever.
Oh yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that. I've already forgotten about the loss last week. I'm just thinking about the next game, you know.
How was your weekend, mate? Did you struggle not watching your lovely Liverpool side?
No, my weekend was pretty great. I've been up in the Norwegian mountains and Virvos. So I've been cross-country skiing like 3 days in a row, which is probably the second longest stretch of cross-country skiing I've ever done.
Yeah, how are the legs, mate? Tired?
No, we didn't go that far, so it was okay. And mainly me practicing my downhill skills, which have gotten quite good by now.
So good.
I'm quite happy with this week.
Yeah, and how far away were you? Like in Norway? How far away from here?
Oh, like 5 hours drive.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah, so it's like 2 hours south of Trondheim.
Oh, okay.
It's like in an eastern valley. It used to be like a mining city.
Mm.
So at some point, it was like Norway's third largest city.
Yeah.
Because it was just so many miners and stuff there. And now it's like on UNESCO's list of worthwhile places to keep as they are. So there's some very, very cool houses, which I remember from my history book when I was little. So
I watched a bit of cross-country skiing over the Christmas break.
Yep.
They had the World Championships or something? Like the World Cup, I think it was.
Yep.
Mate, that sport looks bloody hard. it looks so tiring.
And
I watched the shooting, actually.
Yep. The biathlon.
Yeah, oh mate, what a cool sport.
Yeah, that's my favorite winter sport by far.
Yeah.
It's much more fun than just regular cross-country skiing because the unpredictability of the shooting just makes it a lot more exciting. In cross-country skiing, it's kind of like the best skier wins.
Yeah.
While in biathlon, you need to both be good at shooting and also be good at skiing. So I think it's a lot more fun.
Yeah, I would hire anywhere. I don't know, probably like Australians, English people, like people that have never seen that sport before.
Yeah.
I highly recommend watching it. It's good fun, especially when the crowd's in behind the shooting and they're like, you get like the hometown favorite and they're like cheering on every shot.
Yeah. And it's just, whether it's like cross-country skiing or biathlon, it's just insane how fast those skiers are going.
Yeah.
Because I think I recorded like one of my cross-country ski trips in Strava, and I think I spent like 1 hour 15 minutes doing like 8.5 kilometers or something, and they're doing like I guess they do like 10k in 20 minutes, maybe even less. So it's just insanely fast,
and it's not like they're going downhill all the time too.
No.
Quiz question for the week, mate. Who came 7th to 10th last year in the EPL? So a bit of a tricky one. Wind your memories back about, I don't know, 8-9 months ago. See if you can pick 7th to 10th last year in the EPL.
Yeah, I think this is tricky because nobody really remembers who finished 7th to 10th. But I'll give it a shot.
I think it's just one for, take you down memory lane. See who has fallen since last season and who has actually risen from those kind of players since last season. So Marius just sneezes here. We'll keep the camera rolling.
Yeah.
But mate, Liverpool versus Atletico. It's a beautiful morning. Arsenal have won a game. Liverpool have lost a game coming into this podcast. What happened against Atletico? Don't cry, mate.
No, what happened against Atletico? That's a good question. I mean, Atletico got a throw that they shouldn't have gotten. And Mane could have prevented it, but he was so convinced we were going to get the throw, so he did not. And then Atletico got a corner, and with just four people in the box, they managed to score off that corner, which is like the first corner goal we've conceded all season. So a bit of a series of unfortunate events occurring there. But I mean, that's football. It happens. And Atletico got a goal. I was pretty impressed by Simeone because they had like four players outside of the box trying to prevent counterattacks from Liverpool. And that's probably smart since Liverpool score 5 to 6 goals for every on counterattacks from opposing corners compared to conceding goals on corners.
Yeah.
So I thought he got that part of the tactic spot on, and getting a goal from it too was just very good for Atletico. After that, Liverpool just really, really struggled to create anything. Again, Atletico got their tactics spot on. Liverpool just were forced to pass it all to the fullbacks, who would then try to cross it into the box, and the accuracy wasn't really there this evening, and Atletico defended extremely well and had very little problems like clearing the crosses that did come into the box. Liverpool didn't end up with a shot on target, and Atletico had two pretty good chances of scoring, and in the end they also won on expected goals, and they won pretty, I won't say fair and square, but the best team won in the end, and Atletico used pretty much every single trick in the Dark Arts book to prevent Liverpool from getting chances, to dragging out the play, to simulating and rallying up the referee to try and get money sent off. So
I feel like Simeone lives for games like that, eh? He just sits at home with his, like, just sitting in his little room, like, twiddling his thumbs and just thinking, oh, this is just, that's the ultimate victory, isn't it?
Yes. So, I mean, obviously, I prefer losing to a team which plays beautiful football, but Atletico has their style of play, and it's
totally effective, mate, considering you got zero shots on target for the whole game. That is against basically the best team in the world at the moment. Like, that is so incredible.
Got to give a lot of credit to Atletico and Simeone because they really really got the tactics spot on. They had some good chances from counterattacks.
Yeah.
And in the end, they won. Well-deserved. I do think it's going to be a much more interesting game the other way around, because then Liverpool will be playing at home.
Exactly.
Their fans are going to be really, really riled up and are going to make an atmosphere that will make the London Metropolitano seem like a churchyard. So
yeah, what would you do tactically, mate, to get some more attacking prowess into the Liverpool side?
Yeah, so I think that Klopp for once got the team wrong for this one. I mean, obviously it's unlucky to concede that early, but in the end Atletico was going to play like this regardless of whether they got the early goal or not, just being cagey and trying to pick Liverpool off on counterattacks. And we really lacked Naby Keita or Oxlade Chamberlain in midfield.
Yeah.
That would have enabled us to bypass the lines and create some threat from the centre and not just being forced to play it out on the fullbacks on the flanks where we were just extremely ineffectual. So I think that would have been a lot better, and that is something I really hope that he does for the return leg. Now Henderson got injured, so he's going to probably be out for that game too. So that will sort of force Klopp's hand a bit, and I really hope he plays one of them. And yeah, in the first game, then the two things that also got me annoyed were the substitutions that Liverpool made. Mane was subbed off at halftime, being afraid he was going to get sent off. That one was fair because it was pretty close there towards the end, after getting a yellow, and then Versaico doing a bit of simulation to try and get him sent off for like a second aerial duel. I mean, Mane getting sent off for two aerial duels, that would be funny since he's not very tall. But then when he eventually did put Chamberlain on, which I wanted for like the entire second half, he subbed off Mo Salah. And that was just very weird for me because Chamberlain is not very good when he's playing as a winger, but he's brilliant when he's in central midfield, where he brings attacking threat and is able to shoot pretty good from distance. So that's where I want to see him play, and bringing
it's
up Salah.
Because you're taking off like one of the best attacking weapons in world football for someone that's better positioned somewhere else.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of an odd one. And then you look at it this way, is that the last half an hour of the... Was it 60 minutes Salah came off?
Like only 15, but still. Like, you need a goal. You don't take Salah off unless he has an injury.
Yeah.
Maybe he did.
And you've got Mane off the field too. Like, the best attacking three in world football at the moment.
Yeah.
And you've got two of them sitting on the bench. So, I mean, I wouldn't even if Salah was having a bad game, which I've heard that he wasn't having the greatest game against Atletico, I don't really care because he's lethal in front of goal. Like, all he needs is just to bob up and just get a lucky, you know, just anything, a lucky shot on goal. And I mean, I would pick Salah to be wanting to take that shot over anyone else in the Liverpool lineup, that, or anyone that could come on for him.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And Rui came on for Mane and looked extremely rusty. His touch wasn't really there.
Yep.
So I think Klopp should have played him a bit more so that he wouldn't have been as rusty when we're facing some of the weaker teams in the Premier League. And it's usually when, I mean, in general, he knows way better what he's doing than me, but when he makes his substitutions, it's usually like pretty late, like around the last 15 minutes rather than after 60 or something.
Yeah.
And at that moment in time, I really think Origi would have benefited from some more game time, and then we would have been in for a better shot of a win. But yeah, still one more game to play. Liverpool have... they usually score a goal when they play at home, and I fully back them to be able to do so. And if they do, then it's game on. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And
I mean, you get the feeling if they get one goal that I think it's all over. Atletico, I mean, sorry, I would say either way. I mean, if Atletico get one goal, then Liverpool need to score three.
Yeah.
So that's a major concern. But you kind of get the feeling if Liverpool score one goal, then Atletico, you know, might think about opening up a bit more, possibly. And then it's kind of, you know, Liverpool might be able to run away with it.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Look forward to it.
I look forward to that game very much so. Yeah. Hopefully, I won't tell you what I hope would happen, mate. I wouldn't want to break your heart.
10-0 Atletico.
That'd be the dream. But West Ham, mate, tonight, I'm a bit worried for the West Hamians, if that's the best way. The Hammers, maybe.
You're going to get hammered.
Yeah. I am a bit worried for them. I feel like they might exact a bit of revenge tonight, Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to play with the best team. Everyone's going to be up for it, wanting to get some wins and also trying to wrap up that league title. So, David Moyes had never won at Anfield, and he's been coaching for, I don't know, 15 seasons in the Premier League. He also very rarely, if ever, like he had like one or two wins, I think, away against the top six clubs with Everton.
Yeah.
Or maybe top four clubs, but still. He's not good playing away against big teams, and I think they are going to get beaten severely this evening.
Yeah, it's an interesting game for Liverpool tonight, isn't it? Because they beat Norwich, obviously, 1-0, but it was not convincing at all. I personally thought Mane's goal shouldn't have been a goal. So, and then you go on the back of that, you lose to Atletico. I feel like if it's a disappointing performance against West Ham tonight, even if it's a win, if it's slightly disappointing or just, you know, not the standout performance that Liverpool have been used to since the start of the season, that the, I don't know, things could be getting a bit worrying, I guess, around Liverpool town. What do you think? I mean, you're obviously going to win the league, but, like, it's just interesting because you haven't had a dry patch at all this season. Like, it's all just been win, 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 win. And it'll just be interesting to see, I guess, how long this patch will go for. Because, I mean, it's not really a patch yet. But it'll be interesting to see if this extends, this little like blip in the radar, if this extends to something else.
I don't really think so. I think it's just a one-off from a team that is just an absolutely brilliant machine.
Mm.
And we have a very easy couple of games coming up, playing teams which are pretty far down the league table, so...
It would be interesting to see how you would rate the Liverpool season if they get knocked out in the round of 16 and they go on to win the Premier League.
I don't really care about the Champions League at this stage. It's all about winning the Premier League for once in my life.
But
and,
I mean...
It's just a bonus. We won it last year, so I don't feel there's too much pressure. And I mean, even if you manage to beat Atletico... The Champions League, it's extremely difficult competition. You always need a bit of luck to end up winning it in the end. And who knows, they might have gotten knocked out in the semi-finals against Barcelona anyhow. So it's like, yeah, okay, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. And of course, it would be better to make it past the last 16, but...
I guess it's just going to, when people look back, I think it's going to affect the way people look at this Liverpool side.
It will definitely, like, and me myself, I consider this to be the best team in world football and possibly one of the best, or one of the best teams in the history of football. I would argue it's the best team because it's current, and current always matters. But I would find it difficult to say that if they end up getting knocked out by Atletico in the last 16 round. Then I will fully nudge it down a level and say it's one of the best teams ever.
I don't know, and
not the best.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if you get knocked out round of 16, even if you go on to win the Premier League by a record margin, I still think that they can't even be in the conversation for the best team ever, or one of the best teams.
I'm pretty sure, like, the best teams ever didn't win league and Champions League every single season, so...
Yeah, no, that's true. But, I don't know, we'll have to wait and see, mate. Yeah. This is an interesting debate for a later day. On to more important matters, mate.
Yes, I guess you're pretty happy.
Another beautiful win. And I was saying this, I think I said this 2 weeks ago, that Arsenal kind of have this stretch of games where, although they are well and truly, like, out of the top four, like, they're, you know, they were 10 points or so when I said this, they have an opportunity for the next few games, if they can get on a run, that they have a chance. But the only real way they're going to have a chance is if they, out of the next six games, they got, you know, something close to 18 points, like, at worst get like maybe 14 or 15. Like, they have to go on a run, and so far they're 6 from 6, and I would say Everton was the hardest game out of all of them. So the run I'm talking about is Newcastle, Everton, West Ham, Brighton, Southampton, Norwich, which all those teams, you should, there's no way you can't expect Arsenal to get 18 points from, like, a good Arsenal side should get 18 points from that. So they've got 6 from 6 so far, and I think they overcame their toughest test against Everton, who are on well and truly on form at the moment. I think they're going to give the likes of Manchester United and Chelsea, I think they've got coming up, I think they're going to give them a real run for their money. And yeah, I mean, I think these next four games, I think they still need to get 12 points-ish from them. If they are any hope of getting it, you know, if they're qualifying for the Champions League next year. So, mate, I'm very excited. I think that what Arteta's doing is incredible, really, because the players we're talking about that are doing well are players that have never, like, they weren't a success under Wenger. They weren't a success under Emery. We're talking, like, obviously Luiz doesn't come into the question, but Mustafi, failure under both of them. Xhaka, failure under both of them. Kind of the list, I don't know, there's probably a few more players, but if you can get those, for me, if you can get those two players playing at their peak when this is your first ever head coaching role, I think that's something special.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the sign of a good manager, making the players better, regardless of who they are.
Yeah, I mean, it is early days still, but considering it's basically his rookie coaching season, I'm so excited about Arteta and what he can do. And I also, there are two players I want to talk about mostly in terms of this performance yesterday. One is Bernd Leno, the most underrated goalkeeper, I think, of all time.
Yeah.
He has been incredible this season.
It was brilliant yesterday.
He saved us multiple occasions. One of the saves he made, I think, they thought Calvert-Lewin was offside.
He wasn't, because Xhaka was...
Exactly. So none of the commentators were like, oh my God, that was an incredible save, because they just assumed he was offside. But that save was just something else. And he made a couple of other saves. One where he came right out of the box and got right in, I think it was Richarlison's face, cleared the ball. The bloke is, if you look at his form at the moment, he's the third best keeper in the Premier League at the moment. You can maybe even make the argument that he's more informed than Edison at Man City. He's not getting anywhere near what he deserves in terms of his plaudits. So, so excited of what he can... He's still so young. I think, what are we buying for? Something around the 20 million marks, which is just looking like an absolute bargain at the moment. So, yeah, mate, very excited.
I'm happy you finally found a good goalkeeper.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Well, Petacek was good when he came in, but the thing was he was quite old, so he was only good for a year or two. So, and then the other player I wanted to talk about was Danny Ceballos. I was worried once again when he got picked ahead of Torreira. I get the feeling that maybe he's going to save Torreira for away games or at least for big games when we're playing big teams who are definitely going to put all their efforts into scoring goals. But Danny Ceballos, mate, he was the conductor of the orchestra yesterday. He was superb. Few beautiful through balls through to like the likes of Aubameyang and Saka. And also the thing that impressed me most was his defensive abilities. That's one of the things that if you're going to put him in a center midfield, like you have to be able to defend. And he was superb yesterday in defense. So arguably if, you know, Aubameyang's probably the man of the match because he put two brilliant goals away.
Yeah, they were pretty brilliant.
Yeah, but close behind Ceballos and Leno. Ceballos was superb. So yeah, it's if he keeps this going, Arsenal are probably going to have to buy him come the summer window. So yeah, and it's not just another example of a player that wasn't doing too well under Emery, and Arteta's like, you know, he's getting the best out of him at the moment, and he's very young. I think he's 21 or 22. So yeah, I'm an excited Arsenal fan, mate.
All right. What did you think about Nketiah? He got his first goal.
Yeah.
Do you think he is going to be as good as some of the other youngsters? Is he going to be the leader of the line, or is he going to be a good squad option?
Well, we've got so many good youngsters. So we've got Saka, Martinelli, Willock, Nketiah. I'm definitely forgetting some.
Reece Nelson.
Yeah. So we've got some of the best youngsters, arguably the best youngsters in the Premier League. And I would have him ranked kind of in the middle in terms of like how excited I am and how much I think he can provide for Arsenal going forward. At the top of the list would be Saka and Martinelli, who have just been superb. Saka especially in the last couple of weeks. His ability to find a cross has been something special. So he's not really playing left back though, that's the funny thing. The way Arsenal are playing, for those who haven't been watching, is they're kind of overloading the left. So basically like their whole attacking structure, like if you look at their team from the middle of a pitch, like they kind of all shift towards the left. So Xhaka goes into left back when they attack, and Saka moves forward into basically like a left midfielder position. And Aubameyang can kind of move more centrally, which is better for him, I guess.
Sounds smart, enables them to play at their strengths and mitigate their weaknesses.
Yeah, so it allows Saka to get further forward. His crossing has been just incredible, really. The one he put for Lacazette's goal against Olympiacos was world class. Robin van Persie said on the broadcast, after the game. I'm so excited. It's his maturity too. And just his, he's so calm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't get that for young players. They kind of look like they're kind of buzzing all around the pitch, like headless chickens, like just excited to be out there kind of.
But
he looks like he's got a really good head on his shoulders. Back to, kind of got off track there. Nketiah.
Yeah.
Just so excited about Saka and Martinelli, mate. I just get a bit off track.
Good times.
Yeah. Nketiah. Good. His finish yesterday was superb, like you said earlier. For that cross from Saka was beautiful. Not the easiest finish, and he put it right into the bottom corner. And then he kind of had a bad game against Newcastle last week. So, I guess a bit up and down. Probably more positives than negatives at the moment. And striker's a very, very tough position, isn't it? For a young player, you kind of want to be playing out wide so you get a bit more space.
Yeah,
I'd say for a young player coming in, like, probably the toughest positions to play are throughout the middle of the pitch. So he's definitely got work to do on his finishing. He's got work to do just his general play, like exchanging passes, his positioning. But yeah, I think Nketiah just needs a bit more time before I make any like big judgments on whether he's the real deal or whether he's just he's had a one good game. So,
So expected goals had Everton as the winner here with 2.1 versus 1.3 for Arsenal. So what do you think about that? Did you guys steal the victory? Or
I don't think so, because I think from minute 2 to minute 75-80, we were the better team. I just think we were clinical in front of goal. It was the first time the Arsenal attack was coming together. I feel like that two-week break in Dubai, was all Arsenal needed for their attack to just, you know, get on the front foot and do what we're used to, I guess.
Yeah.
Because Arteta just had such a defensive-minded approach to when he came into the job. Just let's fix that first. Let's make sure we can keep clean sheets or maybe concede just a lot fewer goals. He's achieved that. And then we can look towards more of our attacking kind of approach to play. And yeah, it was the first time yesterday that I looked at our attack. I was like, geez, it's looking a lot better now. It's looking a lot better. Sorry, what was your question again? Did you have a question for me?
I can't remember. Let's just move on.
Enough Arsenal.
Love talking about Arsenal.
It was the expected goals one.
Expected goals.
Yeah. There goes my phone. That's right. Expected goals. So I think as from set piece, we were quite terrible, weren't we? Like just getting the ball away. So they were able to get a lot of, I guess, what expected goals gets out of that is that they were getting lots of shots from close range that you're supposed to convert, and they did. So, and we were just so clinical in front of goal that the goals where you don't 100% expect us to score, we scored. Aubameyang's beautiful finishes in both of his goals, and Saka for the cross for Nketiah. So I still think it was a fair result. I would say that because... I don't know. It could be controversial that I thought we were better than a 3-2 win, to be honest.
Oh, controversial.
Yeah, I'll go against that. Right. Just because we were so bad from set piece.
Okay.
Like if we, in terms of the actual play of the game, I thought we were comfortably the better team.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool would have been much better than Atletico too if they just didn't concede one goal, but you know, who cares?
Yeah, exactly. That's football, sure, isn't it? Anything can happen.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and the Manchester United got a 3-0 win too. Bruno Fernandes with one goal, one assist, and almost a second assist. So he was pretty dominant there, and that is making this look like an incredibly tight race for the Champions League places.
Yeah, it is a very, very tight race. I just don't like Manchester United. I guess I'm just so negative when it comes to them. I just don't really see them as that big of a threat, sorry. But I guess it is positive signs considering they beat Chelsea on Monday and then they actually backed it up by winning a game that they don't normally do that well in against a lower positioned side in the table. So, I mean, if you look at the game on the whole, their first two goals, although they're impressive and Bruno Fernandes did well and so did Martial.
Like, oh, that Martial goal is insane. I love that goal.
Put that down to like goalkeeping errors, especially the first one. I don't see why Foster came out to try and challenge Fernandes for the first one.
Mm.
He wasn't even like, he was well to the side of the goal.
Yeah.
I would have let him go. But and then the second one, Foster, I don't know, maybe he should have come out, but maybe then he should have retreated once he kind of snuffed out the first attack by Martial. I don't know, what do you think? Are you convinced by Manchester United? Do you think they're making progress and do you think they're a real threat to the top four?
Well, as a Liverpool fan, I found it worrying that Bruno Fernandes looks like he's so far been able to replicate his sporting form. I mean, it was a penalty in the end, but it was a well-deserved penalty in the end after a brilliant run by him. And then, I guess, like, the assist he got for Martial was pretty good too. Like, at least, or that he didn't get, but, like, the true ball was pretty good.
And then his actual assist for Greenwood wasn't all that impressive. But, I mean, he's still there. He's still creating chances for his teammates. So,
yeah,
that's pretty good. And now they are ahead of Tottenham by 1 point in that fifth spot, which is going to give Champions League. And Tottenham are missing Son. So, I just... unless one of the other teams like Wolverhampton or Sheffield United or something, I think Arsenal, unfortunately, is a bit too far behind. Then it's going to be tough for a different team to keep United out of it. That's sort of my main...
I think Bruno Fernandes was... It seems like a great signing at the moment, doesn't it? Because if you looked at their midfield before, with Pogba being out, you had McTominay there for the most part, Fred... Pereira or something like that were there for the most part. There's no attacking threat there at all, is there?
Mm.
So now that they have someone that can, you know, provide considerable attacking threat, maybe it was like a, you know, a massive piece of the puzzle missing. I guess it'll be interesting to see how they kick on from here.
Yeah,
they're still in the Europa League, so and they drew with Club Brugge 1-1 on Thursday night, so there's still another avenue there for them to make it back into the Champions League.
True.
But I don't know. I guess for me, mate, I still look at Manchester United in terms of and just in terms of the league table. I think Spurs, you can kind of rule them out and just say they're a really low chance of making it through at the moment, even if fifth is opened up. And then you've got Sheffield United there, got Wolves and Arsenal. I don't know. Maybe I'm very biased, but I still look at the 4 point gap and I think Arsenal can still make that up. And
because it's only 4 points to United.
It's only 4 points. I'm still quite confident.
That's possible. I was thinking Chelsea, but Arsenal are in it for sure.
It's interesting. We'll see who Man United have got coming up. So they've got Everton away. That's a big test. Then we'll find out a lot from that. Then they've got Man City at home. Another massive test. Then they've got Tottenham away. Not the hardest test nowadays, but still a very tough game.
You need to win it.
Sheffield United after that. Their next four games, mate. That's when maybe we can make a kind of another judgment or another...
We'll be telling. So it's going to be very interesting and a race to the finish line. And if they manage to get through those games, then it's a lot easier games. And then only Leicester City in like the final game away. So it should be very winnable for them. And most likely they'll be playing a lot of teams which have nothing left to play for as they're safe in mid table. So
yeah, so it's interesting too, because like we said before with Arsenal, they've got an easy four games coming up. Manchester United got a hard four games coming up, and then it swaps.
Yeah.
So whatever team makes the most of those, you know, periods could go a long way. But the four-point gap really does help a lot.
It does. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. And, I still back Sheffield United, so...
Yeah. All right, we'll move on, mate, and we can kind of stay on that topic. We'll go to the things that got us fired up for the weekend. I was fired up about this on Tuesday, as you know. I just, it frustrates me so much. Sometimes we put things in that get us fired up, but that we're kind of just like a bit grumpy about. But this one actually fires me up a lot. Chelsea and Lampard. I think, let's have a look at the league table. That's probably the best way to go about this. Chelsea are sitting in fourth, but let's completely scrap where they are in the league table right now. Let's just look at their results. They've got 13 wins, 5 draws, and 9 losses. 9 losses. And for me, although they are sitting in fourth, they are, and they, you know, they have this young team, and they, no one expected too much from them this season because they're blooding all these youngsters, blah, blah, blah. 9 losses. I don't think Lampard is getting enough criticism as that he should be, or enough skepticism looking over how he's going. They lost 2-0 to Man United, and although they did rebound and beat a very, very weakened Tottenham side on Saturday, I don't think he's under enough pressure. And the kind of thing that's getting him out of jail all the time, if we can look at the starting lineup against Chelsea, against Manchester United, where they lost 2-0, the thing that's getting him out of jail all the time is people going, oh no, look, he's, you know, he's blooding all these young players, like, give them a chance, blah blah blah, like, you can't really judge them when he's playing all these, you know, 18 to 20 year olds. Let's have a look at the team that was playing against Manchester United.
But they're having injuries, and he has been playing the youngsters for the majority of the season. You can't judge like 2 games out of 27 and then say he's not playing the youngsters.
I'm not going from 2 games out of 27. I'm going from literally since probably December. They've
injuries.
Been poor.
Injuries.
Who's been injured?
Tammy Abraham's been injured quite a bit.
He's been playing, though.
And Pulisic is out, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
Since they're playing Pedro and Willian. And then if Hudson-Odoi was on the bench, then yeah, maybe he should have started. But
well, I mean, Tammy Abraham has had like niggles, but he's still been playing. But I just want to... So look at this team versus Manchester United. You got Cal Barrow, old. Reece James, young. I don't know how old is he.
Yeah, he's 19 or something. So yeah. He's a teenager.
So there's one young player. Christensen,
23 something.
Been around for ages. Rudiger, old. Azpilicueta, ancient. Kovacic, young, but still he's played a lot of football. Real Madrid,
25.
He doesn't count for me. Jorginho, old. Kante, old. Pedro, old. Batshuayi, been around for ages. Willian, old. I'm not, no, seriously.
So
English press have got to stop letting Lampard off the hook. They have to let him off the hook because he should be under a lot more pressure than he is at the moment. I know he's coming fourth, but they've had 9 losses. I'm not convinced, mate. I'm not convinced by Chelsea.
You want to hear a couple of stats now?
Okay, here we go.
All right. So first stat is 13. That's the number of wins Chelsea have. Second stat is 8. That's the number of wins Arsenal have.
Yeah.
That's almost twice as many wins. And in the end, wins count more than losses and draws. So it's the wins that matter. And they're in fourth. And if one is looking at expected goals, it's also pretty well deserved because they are third on expected points in the league. So ahead of Leicester, ahead of Wolves, ahead of Manchester United, Everton, and Arsenal, and everyone. And if one is looking at both their expected goals for and against, they are seriously underperforming both. So they're 6 goals behind the expected goals for, and they are 8 goals behind expected goals against.
Okay. Let's have a look at that. Manchester City are coming first on expected goals.
Yeah.
So if anyone thinks out there that Manchester City have been better than Liverpool this season...
It's not a perfect stat, and we covered this on a different episode when I talked about game states and how Liverpool are barely in the doldrum when City's just dominating weak teams. But, still, Chelsea's stats are good, and they deserve to be top four at least.
Yeah. Anyway, I can just sum it up by saying I just think Lampard... I'm not saying Lampard should be sacked or anything like that. I just think there should be more questions over how he's performed in his first season so far.
I definitely agree that English managers get a lot easier ride than foreign ones, and that's just a huge bias in the press.
Yeah.
And it has annoyed me in the times in the past too, especially during the Benitez era.
Yeah. Okay, mate, what got you fired up? I need to take a deep breath and have some water.
So, I mean, Lo Celso should have gotten sent off. I was extremely weird, and at least we are this time admitted that they made a mistake. So I guess that's better than the usual black box stuff and claiming that they do everything perfect. And then... Okay, so both of these are really more annoyed than really angry. And the second one was Raheem Sterling, who said that there's a bias against Manchester City because in each of the seasons that they have won the league when he was playing there, or even before he was playing there, like the last 4 times they won the league or whatever, a Liverpool player got voted to player of the year by the other players. And... On like, when you just hear the statement, I mean, I agree, it doesn't quite make sense that Manchester City didn't have the player of the year in a single year, which they won the title. But then one looks at the players which actually ended up winning the title during those seasons. And the first one was Luis Suarez, who scored 32 goals to equal like the all-time record of goals scored in a Premier League season at that stage. He was just absolutely insane that year and totally deserved to win player of the year because he was by miles and miles the best player in the league.
Yeah.
And then The second one was Mohamed Salah, which broke the record for the most goals in the Premier League 38 game season by scoring 32 and was absolutely sensational. And then the third was Virgil van Dijk last year, who also got voted to be the second best footballer on earth this year in the Ballon d'Or. So normally I would agree, but in this case I very much disagree with Sterling, and after all it is an award for the best player and not the best team. And of course United City had the best team the years they won the league, but that doesn't mean they had the best player in the league, and rightfully so they didn't. And also, fun fact, Raheem Sterling, who obviously is upset because he didn't win it because he scored a lot of goals, tactically voted for Harry Kane last year, and Virgil van Dijk voted for Raheem Sterling. And Kane scored like 17 goals last year. No way was he like the best player in the league. So it's also a bit funny, and I think it says a bit about Raheem Sterling.
Wow, that's very interesting. But I want to go back to the Los Celso, is that how you pronounce it? Not getting sent off. And I actually didn't have a problem with it. And I know that's hugely controversial because from what I've heard from everyone, everyone's like, oh, it's a red card. Like, I haven't heard really anyone come out and say it wasn't a red card. But watch it in real time. And I don't know. Los Celso, I thought, was just putting his foot down. And he didn't. Azpilicueta came out of nowhere, came from behind him, and he stuck his foot in there. He dived, basically. Well, not dived, but he was on his bum by the end of it. And I don't think Lo Celso saw his leg and was like, bang, I'm going to stamp on it. If you watch it in real time, Azpilicueta just ended up there and he put his foot down. So when you watch it in slow motion, it's a lot worse than you think for me.
I still think it's a red card, but I do agree it looks a lot worse in slow motion than during real time. And I think that is also an issue when the VAR referees and also the media stations show these replays, that they usually just show it in slow-mo, and situations look a lot different in slow-mo than what they do in real time.
Yeah, we're watching it again here now. Like, I've got no problem with that being a red card, not being a red card. Like, I don't think there's any way you can say that he purposefully tried.
There's no way. Like, Aspi just sticks his foot in there.
So how, I don't know, can you give a red card if it's accidental, do you think?
Dangerous play, yeah.
Dangerous play, accidental?
Yeah, so I guess that's the rule it was sort of going to.
Yeah.
But okay, let's...
Hard enough, footballers, hard
let's
enough.
Let's move on.
Yeah, should we go our value tips of the week now?
Yeah, let's go to our value tips of the week.
Yep. All right. Not the greatest week for us last week. We actually lost all of our tips.
Oh,
so I think so I had drawn over Liverpool. You had -2.7 Man City, West Ham. And then you also had a draw, PSG.
Yeah, they only won 2-0. Very annoying.
No, 2-1.
2-1.
PSG and... you're talking about the West Ham game. Yeah. But the draw was actually probably one of the closest ones that we nearly got, because it was it was 1-1 with like 15 minutes left, I think. So came close. Overall, we're still $512 in the green. But mate, you got a bit of catching up to do.
Yeah, I do.
I'm plus 346, and you're up. We won't say what you're at, mate, but you need to hurry up and get...
Yeah, I'm still profitable.
Still profitable, yeah, definitely. And right. Jonas is still helping us out a bit. Your CBS pick of the week, mate?
This time for the Champions League, Barcelona versus Napoli over 2.75 goals at 2-0.
Don't mind that one. They like to score goals, both of them, don't they?
Yeah, and I mean, Napoli are pretty bad in the league now, so I reckon Barcelona will be able to pull it off and...
I guess the only problem is if Napoli like to sit back a bit and just defend their goal.
I mean, they're going to play counter-attack, that's for sure. But I reckon they'll be able to score a goal at home and Barcelona to score two, and that brings it over.
I think that's a good bet. For me, firstly, I'll go with the one for the Champions League. So this would be on Wednesday night, I think. I've got Juventus beating Napoli at 197. They are away from home, but I think 197 is... I think that's quite valuable. Oh no, not over Napoli, over Lyon. Sorry. Lyon are coming, I think, seventh or something in the League One. Yeah. Not performing well at all. and they made it through in that group with Chelsea, Lille, and another team. I can't remember who they were, but it's not like they were in a tough group. So they were able to make it through. And yeah, Juventus, I just think Ronaldo, like, big game.
Yeah.
First leg, I'm very confident that Juventus can win that one. I think 197 is great value. And then my other one, this fight, Tony Ferguson, Khabib Nurmagomedov, is actually in 2 months from now. Like, might be less, maybe a month and a half. It's in April. I don't know when. So it's a long time away. But this is the greatest value I think I might have ever seen in my whole entire life. These guys have been scheduled to fight. They're like the two best lightweights in the world, two of the best fighters of all time, I would say. If you watch MMA much, I would say this is possibly one of the greatest MMA fights of all time. I'd say top two. The only other one I would say in terms of like just overall ability would be Jones and Cormier, who have fought two times. Just in terms of like the quality of mixed martial artists, I would say this is right up there.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony, I've written his name as Tony Ferguson, but it's Tony Ferguson. I think he's the worst stylistic matchup for Khabib of you could possibly imagine, because Khabib, you've probably never seen him fight, but he's the guy that beat McGregor about a year and a half ago. He's probably the best ever wrestler that's ever been put into the cage. And he normally just out wrestles his opponents, ground and pounds, just beats the living crap out of them. But Ferguson's actually a very good wrestler himself, and on his feet I think he'll be able to dominate Khabib. He's very good in transitions. I think he has better jiu-jitsu than Khabib, and I would not be surprised. I think it's one of those fights that might go into like the third, fourth round, and Ferguson might be able to submit him or just like literally destroy his face. There's a photo of all of Ferguson's last opponents and how they've ended up, and all of them, he's had so many fights stop because of cuts and stuff like that, just because their faces are just destroyed, because he's a ruthless man. And I think 305, if everyone gets on now, I got on yesterday and put a lot of money on.
Where your mouth is.
Let's just say I put a lot of money on, and if his odds continue to rise, I will, because I know that I think when it gets closer to fight time that you'll be able to hedge your bet. I think Khabib's odds will rise, because they were scheduled to fight 2 years ago or 3 years ago maybe, and the odds were evens. Maybe even Ferguson was favourite. They were completely even, and I had a hefty sum on there because I thought he was still value.
And then it just went down because he managed to beat McGregor, you think?
Or? Well, yeah, that's the thing. Is people think McGregor's this incredible fighter just because his name's massive. And they think if you can beat McGregor, well, you can beat anyone in the world.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm pretty sure McGregor was at smaller odds to beat Khabib than Ferguson is here, which is just absolutely ludicrous for me. So I would say get on now at 305. I cannot believe they're that high, those odds, and I think you'll be able to hedge your bet later in the when it gets closer to fight time. But yeah, he was evens when they were scheduled to fight last time, and since then both fighters have continued to win, look dominant. So nothing's really like changed to the point where you go, oh my god, Khabib's gonna beat him by even more. So I would say get on that now, everyone. But that's the value tips of the week. So 7th to 10th, do you want to have a guess who you think finished 7th to 10th last year?
In no particular order, or I guess, maybe they finished,
you should be able to get 7th.
Alright, Wolves?
Yeah, because they qualified for Europa, so yeah. I think that's an easy one. But 8th to 10th,
Leicester.
Okay, yeah. That's one of the teams.
And who else can have finished in the... I should have paid more attention to the league table now.
you're focusing too much on Everton. Everton went in there, yeah.
And...
I don't think you'll get the last one.
I'm going to go Burnley.
No, it was West Ham. So 7th Wolves, 8th Everton, 9 Leicester, and West Ham on equal points with Leicester.
Ooh, wow.
On 52 points. So West Ham, what a drop-off they have had.
And Leicester almost have the same amount of points as they did last season already. They're currently at 50 points, so
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
So yeah, very interesting, mate. And but yeah, that brings us to the end of the podcast.
Yep. If you like this podcast and want us to make more podcasts like this, then please give us a thumbs up, download our podcast on your favorite podcast software channel, Spotify, SoundCloud, yeah, whatever, and subscribe, of course, and also make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel and like this video, because that's awesome.
I'll jump in there too. We've got a big podcast coming out this Thursday or Friday, it'll be, with Jonas Jelstad. So everyone's been wondering how he went after his 10,000 to 1 million year in 2016-17 since those videos came out. Yeah, I sat down with Jonas and we discussed what he's been up to for the 3-4 years since. So if you want to find out more about Jonas, then definitely you'll have to download that one and listen in.
All right, that's going to be cool. I look forward to it.
Yeah, cool.